Today is Thursday, August 9th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Coming up, the United States has decided to impose new sanctions on Russia. How could this affect Moscow's economy?
The ruble has hit new lows. The sanctions have driven down their currency. So I think it's going to cause a fair amount of pain.
Chinese state media is accusing the United States of a mobster mentality in its move to implement additional tariffs. And what's staring at all your devices doing to your eyes? It's all ahead on today's International Edition. The United States has decided to impose new sanctions on Russia following the nerve agent attack on a former Russian spy and his daughter in Britain in March. The British government determined the toxin used against Sergei Skripal and his daughter Yulia in Salisbury was Novichok, a military-grade agent developed in the then Soviet Union. Both were hospitalized for weeks and have since recovered from the effects of the attack. A State Department press statement said the sanctions to take effect on or around August 22nd are based on Moscow's violation of the 1991 Chemical and Biological Weapons Control and Warfare Elimination Act. Shortly after the attack, the U.S. joined Europe in ordering dozens of Russian diplomats to leave and shuttered the Russian consulate in Seattle, Washington. The decision comes at a time when the Trump administration is seeking ways to improve relations with Moscow. Robert Manning, a senior fellow and security expert at the Atlantic Council, told VOA's Victor Beatty the sanctions could be serious.
It involves technology exports. It involves both international institution lending and lending from U.S. banks. There are some potential waivers on some of the technology exports, for example, spare parts for the space station, which we still have with Russia, and that sort of thing. And I think there are some other waiver possibilities, but I think it's pretty extensive, and it's coming at a time when the ruble has hit new lows. The sanctions have driven down their currency. So I think it's going to cause a fair amount of pain.
Will this upend the president's effort to improve relations with Moscow?
That's a complicated relationship. We have two nuclear weapon states. Putin apparently had proposed some ideas for arms control to the president. I would argue that extending New START and perhaps even going to lower levels of nuclear weapons is in both the U.S. and Russian interests. So I don't see any reason why we shouldn't proceed on that. It depends on that front, and it really is sort of a case by case. We have to push them to get a settlement in Ukraine, for example, and Syria is really a huge issue that has fundamentally destabilized Europe with the refugee flow. So if we can get any cooperation from them on that, then I think that's worth pursuing. I think we can walk and chew gum at the same time.
Which means?
Which means there are components of the relationship where I think we can move forward, and I think we have to keep the sanctions on. Look, there have to be some standards in the world, and you can't allow governments to go around poisoning people the way that Putin has done on several occasions now. There have to be costs to that.
Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky is in Moscow and apparently handed a letter from President Trump to his Russian counterpart. The contents are not exactly clear, but there apparently was an offer of cooperation in various areas like terrorism, legislative dialogue, and resuming cultural exchanges.
I think that there's a case to be made for that. I think you want to keep communications channels open. I think there are controlled, managed, what they call managed democracy, but they're not. It's not the Soviet Union. I don't see a downside to that. And I think on issues like terrorism, counter-narcotics activity, possibly Afghanistan, North Korea, we need to work with Russia to get results that we want on a number of issues.
Russia said it plans to retaliate against the United States for imposing sanctions against it in connection with the poisoning in Britain. Russia's U.S. embassy dismissed what it called the far-fetched accusations in the U.S. decision, insisting it has been presented no facts or evidence and demanded an open and transparent investigation of the crime committed in Salisbury. The Russian currency, the ruble, on Thursday traded at a near two-year low against the dollar. Other top stories. Yemeni tribal leaders say an airstrike by the Saudi-led coalition fighting Shiite rebels hit a bus in a market in northern Yemen, killing at least 50 people, including children, and wounding as many as 77. Puerto Rico has conceded that Hurricane Maria killed more than 1,400 people on the island last year, and not just the 64 in the official death toll. The government acknowledged the higher death toll with no fanfare in a report submitted to Congress this week. North Korea accused the United States Thursday of pushing for international sanctions despite goodwill moves by Pyongyang and said progress on denuclearization promises could not be expected if Washington continues to follow an outdated acting script. Expanded coverage of these stories and more is at our website. This is International Edition.
This is Science in a Minute.
An international team of astronomers have confirmed the existence of 44 new extrasolar planets. The planets were first spotted by the astronomers through data gathered from NASA's Kepler-K2 mission. To verify their findings, the astronomers compared the K2 information with similar data gathered by the European Space Agency's Gaia Space Telescope and a number of ground-based telescopes in the U.S. Four of the new planets are said to circle their host stars in less than 24 hours, meaning a year on these planets is less than a day on Earth. 16 of the planets are in the same size class as Earth, but one of the planets they found is really small. The astronomers say that using the validation techniques they developed could help speed up confirmation of more extrasolar planet candidates. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is VOA's International Edition. Chinese state media is accusing the United States of a mobster mentality in its move to implement additional tariffs on Chinese goods and warns Beijing has all the necessary means to fight back. Reuters' Grace Lee reports.
Beijing sent another warning shot to Washington on Thursday, with its state media accusing the U.S. of mobster mentality. In an editorial, state newspaper China Daily said that China's still trying to avoid a trade war, but in the face of America's, quote, ever greater demand for protection money, it has no choice but to fight back. This comes after blowback on Wednesday, when China vowed to slap additional tariffs on U.S. imports, 25% on $16 billion in goods, in retaliation to U.S. plans of collecting the same. In July, both countries slapped duties on $34 billion of each other's imports, with Washington firing first. Now the U.S. says it's considering hiking proposed tariffs on additional $200 billion worth of Chinese goods. The trade dispute between the two are already impacting a range of industries, from steel to cars, and causing tensions over which products could be targeted next. China says it can weather the storm, and official data on Wednesday backed up that claim. It showed the country's exports rose more than expected, and import growth accelerated to its fastest since January.
A magnitude 6.2 quake rocked Indonesia's Lombok Island and the neighboring island of Bali Thursday. It caused instant panic after Sunday's quake, and the region killed more than 300 people. People of Bali's International Airport were seen shouting and running down escalators, streaming out of the exits and across the main hall. Officials said the epicenter of the aftershock was on land and there was no risk of a tsunami. State media reports the death toll in Sunday's devastating earthquake on Indonesia's Lombok Island has risen to 347. A spokesman for the country's National Disaster Mitigation Agency said on Wednesday that another 1,400 people were injured and more than 165,000 have been displaced. The numbers have increased as reports come in from areas isolated by the 6.9 magnitude quake, which was struck off the waters on the northern part of Lombok Island. The quake was also felt on the neighboring Gili Islands, as well as Bali, Sumbawa, and parts of East Java. The International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies is appealing for $9 million to provide emergency aid. Lisa Schlein has more from Red Cross headquarters in Geneva.
The Red Cross describes the damage in North Lombok as exceptionally destructive, with 75% of the buildings in some villages damaged or turned into rubble. Red Cross Federation spokesman Matthew Cochran says some of the more remote areas of the island are cut off and have not yet been visited. He says it will take many days for the full impact of the disaster to emerge.
One of the interesting things coming in from our teams is the psychological toll of the earthquake. Teams speak of coming across ghost towns of villages that have been essentially abandoned. People have left their homes, they're fearful of living, of staying inside, or perhaps fearful of another major earthquake and a possible tsunami.
Cochran says these emotional scars and the concerns of the remote communities will have to be addressed in addition to providing survivors with emergency shelter and other basic relief. The Red Cross reports some of the thousands of families forced to flee their homes are staying in evacuation centers or in makeshift camps in open areas. The agency says its appeal will provide emergency shelter supplies as well as materials for repairing and rebuilding damaged houses. Over the coming 18 months, the Red Cross says its emergency operation will focus on creating livelihood opportunities for the survivors. It also will provide health, water and sanitation, protection, and information on disaster risk reduction. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
On Tuesday, the government estimated that 80% of the buildings in northern Lombok have been destroyed. Thousands of tourists have been evacuated from Lombok and the Gili Islands. The Indonesian government says the death toll is expected to rise as search and rescue crews reach more affected areas and begin to search the rubble for more victims. United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres called for the complete elimination of nuclear weapons on Thursday. He was speaking at a ceremony marking the 73rd anniversary of the atomic bombing of Nagasaki, Japan. VOA's Jeff Kusser has that story.
United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres on Thursday called for the complete elimination of nuclear weapons at a ceremony marking the 73rd anniversary of the atomic bombing of Nagasaki. It was the first time a UN Secretary General attended the Nagasaki Peace Memorial Ceremony held every year. His predecessor, Ban Ki-moon, was the first to attend the anniversary event commemorating the Hiroshima atomic bombing in 2010. During his speech, Guterres said fears of a nuclear war still exist today, and it remains the highest priority for the United Nations.
Let us commit to making Nagasaki the last place on Earth to suffer nuclear devastation. The total elimination of nuclear weapons remains the highest disarmament priority of the United Nations. Here in Nagasaki, I call on all countries to commit to nuclear disarmament and to start making visible progress as a matter of urgency. And nuclear weapon states have a special responsibility to lead.
The mayor of Nagasaki called on the Japanese government to join the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons Treaty in order to lead a nuclear-free world. Japan is the only country to suffer atomic bombings.
The record of the Dome of Nagasaki, target for atom bomb number 2, is filmed from a superfortress many miles away.
Tokyo did not take part in the UN negotiations on the treaty, saying such talks without nuclear-armed countries participating would not contribute to bringing about a world without nuclear weapons. Jeff Custer, VOA News.
And this is International Edition.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. This week, African elections, fallout from a narrow and disputed victory for ZANU-PF in Zimbabwe, and we preview what's at stake for the runoff election in Mali with J. Peter Pham, director of the Africa Center at the Atlantic Council, and John Tomaszewski, Africa director at the International Republican Institute. That's Encounter this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, fresh off a two-nation Africa visit to Zimbabwe and Malawi, Shaka Sali talks about the fascinating people he met and the challenges he encountered reporting on democracy in Africa. On the road with Shaka on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
From the Voice of America, this is International Edition. New York City is moving to rein in Uber and Lyft with a cap on all ride-hail vehicles. AP correspondent Mike Gracia has this update.
With Wednesday's city council vote, New York has become the first major U.S. city to impose a cap on Uber and other app-based ride-hailing services. The city council voted to impose a one-year moratorium on new licenses for for-hire vehicles. The council also set a minimum driver wage for app-based drivers on par with the yellow cab wage. The actions were taken amid concerns that the flood of app-based ride services in New York has hurt business for all ride services in the city. Opponents of the action argued that Uber and Lyft provide services to neighborhoods outside Manhattan that are poorly served by yellow cabs. I'm Mike Gracia.
Substance abuse in the United States is getting worse. New data from the Centers for Disease Control shows more than 40,000 Americans died from opioid overdoses in 2016. That's more than 25% increase from the year before. Washington Post reporter Katie Zerma told VOA, opioid first use came under scrutiny a little over a decade ago.
People getting addicted to these painkillers that came out, from the late 1990s up through the 2000s. And people really started to pay attention in, the mid-2000s. And there were crackdowns on these pills. Law enforcement started to try and get these pills off the street. They cracked down on them. They became much, much harder to use. But in the same time, you had a lot of people who were addicted. So what they did was they then turned to heroin, which the cartels came in and put a lot of heroin on the street, and it was readily available. So as people could not get pills, they turn to heroin.
Trump has promised to fight back, declaring the opioid crisis a public health emergency. In this week's Plugged In, VOA contributor Greta Van Susteren and her guests take a hard look at the ongoing battle against opioid addiction in the United States. VOA's Jessasumi Oni has more. We appear to have a problem with that audio. We'll bring that story to you if we have time. If you've ever spent a lot of time in front of a computer, you've probably also become bleary-eyed. Well, that's because you don't blink as much when you are working on a computer, which could lead to dry eyes. With the popularity of video games and online activities, dry eye is becoming increasingly common in children and teens glued to their screens. The condition can cause permanent eye damage. VOA's Carol Pearson reports that Aston University professor James Wolfson has developed an app to combat that problem.
Kids are addicted to cell phones, tablets, anything with electronic screens. The problem is, it's bad for their eyes.
But what we're beginning to see is now with the use particularly of screens, so digital screens, tablets, smartphones, that actually even children are reporting dry eyes.
Tears contain oil. In this YouTube video, the doctor is pointing out the oil glands that are in the eyelid.
The tear film on the front of your eye is there all the time, not just when you cry. It's less than a tenth of the thickness of a human hair, but without it, you wouldn't see at all.
With kids spending more time in front of a screen, for pleasure and for school, many may be at risk without knowing it.
When you concentrate very hard on a task, such as on a computer screen, you blink less. And also, instead of fully blinking, you partially blink. And so what's happening is damage is being done to the front of the eye.
Tears aren't being produced. They evaporate and leave behind the salty content of the tear, which can do further damage to your eyes. But now there's an app to diagnose dry eyes. At this demonstration in London, the app asks users to answer simple questions to determine how long they can comfortably stare at a computer screen without blinking.
We're actually using the technology that potentially could cause problems if you use a lot of it to actually help us with the diagnosis.
Those who tried the app are then tested for dry eye. But doctors say, even if you don't have the app, make sure to blink fully and blink often whenever you're in front of a tablet or computer screen, and remind your children to do the same. Carol Pearson, VOA News.
All right, now we have fixed our audio problem, and we do have our story from VOA's Jessasumi Oni on our plugged-in segment with contributor Greta Van Susteren.
Opioid addiction is an epidemic that's sweeping the nation. Every day, an average of 115 Americans die from opioid-related overdoses. The class of drugs includes illegal drugs such as heroin, but also legally prescribed pain relievers such as oxycodone. Travis Reeder experienced the horrors of opioid withdrawal as he struggled to recover from a motorcycle accident. He says opioids are not necessarily the issue.
I had my foot blown apart in a motorcycle accident. I had genuine, acute, severe post-traumatic pain. I needed medication. I needed pain management. But I didn't have it managed well over the long term, and that was the problem.
Pam Bondi, who sits on the President's Commission on Drug Addiction and the Opioid Crisis, says the problem needs to be tackled on multiple fronts.
I'm a career prosecutor, so enforcement, crackdown, get these things off the streets, that's so important. But we've got to start at the very front, such as the post office, such as education to kids, because these drugs are taking these crazy new forms now.
Experts say even the ongoing crackdown on legal and illicit opioids hasn't had the desired effect, because opioid users will often turn to synthetic and sometimes more deadly options when they are unable to get their fix. Jessasumi Oni, VOA News, Washington.
And that's going to do it for today's International Edition. Jackson Vunganyi directed the program, and Wojciech Zorniak engineered the broadcast. Thank you to you both. But before I go, I do want to thank you for taking some of the time out of your day to join us. Be sure to keep up with The Voice of America with the latest pictures, videos, stories, and more by following us on social media. YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram is where you'll find us. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Have a wonderful Wednesday.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The White House issued a statement strongly condemning the ongoing violence in Nicaragua and human rights abuses committed by the Daniel Ortega regime in response to protests. After years of fraudulent elections and the regime's manipulation of Nicaraguan law, as well as the suppression of civil society, opposition parties, and independent media, the Nicaraguan people have taken to the streets to call for democratic reforms. These demands have been met with indiscriminate violence, with reports of more than 350 dead, thousands injured, and hundreds of citizens labeled coup mongers and terrorists who have been arbitrarily detained, tortured, or who have gone missing. The White House noted that President Ortega and Vice President Rosario Murillo are ultimately responsible for the actions of the pro-government parapolice, who have brutalized their own people. The United States stands with the people of Nicaragua, including members of the Sandinista Party, who are calling for democratic reforms and an end to the violence. Free, fair, and transparent early elections are the only avenue toward restoring democracy in Nicaragua. The U.S. supports the Catholic Church-led national dialogue process for good faith negotiations toward that end. The U.S. is promoting accountability of Ortega government officials responsible for human rights abuse and corruption. Three Nicaraguan officials, Francisco Diaz, Fidel Moreno, and Francisco Lopez, have been sanctioned under Executive Order 13818, issued by the President of the United States to build upon the Global Magnitsky Human Rights Accountability Act. These steps, the White House said, are a start, not an end, of potential sanctions in response to continued serious human rights abuses and corruption. The United States is revoking or restricting visas of Nicaraguan officials and their families when those officials have been responsible for police violence against protesters and municipal authorities. The U.S. has also cut off further sales and donations of equipment that Ortega's security forces might misuse. The United States has announced an additional $1.5 million in aid to continue support for freedom and democracy in Nicaragua, providing a critical lifeline for civil society, human rights organizations, and independent media currently under threat from the Ortega regime. The United States called on the Ortega regime to immediately end the state-sanctioned violence perpetrated by police and parapolice forces. The United States will continue to closely monitor the situation in Nicaragua and work with the international community to hold those responsible for the violence to account.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.